Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Tuesday morning is when we hear from Tim Wilms from the unshackled.net in Melbourne with our weekly look at events in Australia. Tim is with us. Hi, Tim. Good to have you back.
Hi, Paul. Good to be back. And we've got the ASEAN Summit here in Melbourne. Ooh. And Victoria Police have set up a ring of steel around the
Ring of Steel,
which gives a lot of us lockdown PTSD.
PTSD, yes.
But because there's obviously a lot of national leaders gathered here. So ASEAN is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. The Victoria Police have got special search powers in Melbourne CBD.
Right. Okay. So are they anticipating trouble or just, you know, being careful?
Well, there's going to be the Vietnamese, Cambodian, Laotian and Burmese diaspora in Australia protesting their regimes, communist and military regimes, respectively, back in where their families were originally from. But they're pretty peaceful. But of course, when there's global leaders in town, there's always always a big security presence. I remember APAC, which was hosted by Sydney in 2007, there was a ring of steel around Sydney.
Ring of steel.
But the chaser still got through in a fake Canadian motorcade with one of their pranksters, Chaz Lichardello, dressed as Osama bin Laden.
Oh, dear. Okay, and do they sort of drive through the streets in great long convoys of black SUVs with flashing lights and, you know, everyone has to get out of the way until they've gone through? Is that how it works?
I'm not sure if there'll be that sort of fanfare, it's not the same as the US president coming to town.
Yeah.
Although at least Anthony Albanese, with Australia hosting this summit, he doesn't need to leave the country.
No, not this time. Okay, I'm really curious. The Dunkley by-election, what was the result?
So Labor retained the seat. So Jody Bellier, the Labor candidate, I remember telling your audience last week that she said those whites who voted against the Aboriginal voice had white privilege. So there was, on a two-party preferred basis, a 3.64% swing to the Liberal Party. They had a good candidate in Nathan Conroy, the local mayor of the city of Frankston, and born in Ireland, so still, as I mentioned, has that thick Irish accent. There was a big swing to the Liberals on the primary vote, though there was no One Nation or United Australia Party candidate, though there was the Libertarian Party. They got 2.5%. And Darren Bergwolf, who's a community freedom activist, got 4.75%. So the Liberals got 39% primary and Labor got 41%. There was a collapse in the Green vote from 10% to 6%. They basically ran dead in the seat. They didn't have any volunteers on the day, probably too busy making their pro-Palestine banners every week to turn up.
And what was the campaigning like? Obviously, the Liberals made some sort of dent. You're talking about, what, a 3.5% swing, basically. So what was Labor saying about their opposition during the campaign?
Well, cost of living was the primarily on the mind of voters, because obviously we've had the 12 interest rate increases. We've had the inflation crisis as well. So things are a lot worse than they were since Albanese came to office in May 2022. Now, the seat of Dunkley, it's where I've grown up and where I've lived a lot of my life, so I know the area well. It's still a predominantly white working class seats, but it's quite in terms of there's in the affluent suburb Mount Eliza, there was a huge swing to the Liberals. So obviously they didn't like Labor's stage three tax cut changes, which halved the tax cut promised to high income earners. Their vote held up in the more working class suburbs of Frankston and Seaford and Carrum Downs. So the spin from Labor is that they've indicated from retweaking the stage three tax cuts to deliver those on low middle income wages, salaries that a tax cut that they weren't expecting, although a 3.6% swing, that's not nothing.
That's not just the wealthy people, is it?
Oh, well, that's what I was saying. In the there was a swing in most of the booths.
So across the board,
more profound in the wealthier suburb of Mount Eliza.
So people do vote with their wallets in the end, sounds like.
Yes, though there was in the final week, Victoria Police, they announced on Wednesday that they'd arrested one of the 149 asylum seekers for an alleged sexual assault in Melbourne. And so he was in a indefinite detention until the High Court decision because he, in the middle of the night, snuck into a woman's home into her bedroom while she was sleeping.
Oh, okay.
And so this was on Wednesday night. Not good. And so the Liberal opposition, Peter Dutton, went in hard and called for the Immigration Minister Andrew Giles' resignation. And Susan Ley, the Deputy Liberal Leader, put out a tweet. If you live in Frankston and you've got a problem with Victorian women being assaulted by foreign criminals, vote against Labor. If you do not want to see Australian women being assaulted by foreign criminals, vote against Labor. Send Labor a message. But then later on Thursday afternoon, Victoria Police said that they got the wrong man.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Right. So it was because he was wearing one of the GPS ankle bracelets, so they placed him in the area, and it looked like him on the CCTV, but they later discovered that it wasn't him. Somebody who looked like him. So they had charged him with a number of sex and stalking offences, but they released him and apologised to him. It was quite the extraordinary story, though. Susan Ley, she didn't back down, even though she was called racist, dog whistling for this tweet. She didn't delete it. She said the point still stands. There's still these foreign criminal sex offenders in the community. And the director of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, Con Karanagatibdis, it's a long Greek name, he said that he'll be taking Susan Ley to the Human Rights Commission, lodging a complaint that she breached the Racial Discrimination Act by inciting racial hatred. So,
oh dear, yeah.
The old running to the Human Rights Commission tactic is back. So one of the New South Wales Green Senator, Maureen Faruqi, she's taking Pauline Hanson to the Human Rights Commission for telling her, telling Maureen Faruqi when she called the Queen the leader of a racist, a colonising empire after she died. Pauline Hanson tweeted, "If you don't like it here, piss off back to Pakistan." So this is
I don't see how that incites racial hatred.
But this is a tactic that your audience would be aware of.
It's funny, the Human Rights Commissioner here wasn't interested in any of the blatant throwing under the bus of our human rights. So, you know, you even wonder if they're probably just a waste of space in the end, you know.
Yes, they tend to be very, tend to be about the human right, made up human right not to be offended, which of course offense.
Yeah, snowflakes, snowflakes.
Taken, not given.
Yeah.
So we have this farce here, but it's always designed the process to be the punishment.
Yeah.
And basically to shut up their critics.
And bleed you dry on legal lawfare as you go through.
So the spin from the Labor hacks and supporters is that the Liberals and Advance Australia, the conservative activist group, their racist dog whistling didn't work in Dunkley voters saw through it. So if that swing was replicated at a general election, which it probably wouldn't be because it's a by-election, the voters know the government's not going to change, but they can make a protest vote. So, but if that was replicated in a general election, because the Liberals have to win 18 seats to get majority government at the next election.
Right.
Force Labor into minority, but not return the Liberals to government.
I've got to say, I'm over the term dog whistling. I'm over that. I've heard that too many times. Okay, I'm really interested to hear what has happened in this double murder case. Last time we talked, they were looking for the bodies, waiting, trying to do some sort of deal with the murderer. He was holding out on revealing the location of the bodies. What has happened?
The alleged gay cop killer, Bo Lamar Condon, he gave up the location of the bodies. They were at a neighbouring property at Bungola near Goulburn that police originally looked.
Where they looked is where the bodies were.
It was at an adjacent property 20 minutes down the road. They're in the right area. Like my personal opinion is that they probably could have kept looking and found them because I mentioned last week there's a new law, no body, no parole. And I think everybody would be horrified if Bo Lamar Condon, obviously, is yet to be found guilty, but if he was ever eligible for parole, because it is such a chilling and horrific alleged murder.
Yeah, you can't have people like that running around.
No, and so he put them in surfboard bags. And it's got weirder as more detail has come out in the investigation. So his original target was only Jesse Baird. He purchased one surfboard bag.
I got you. Yeah.
His boyfriend Luke Davies was there. And so
that was just wrong place, wrong time for the other guy.
It is, but still, the fact that he allegedly went in there to murder somebody, that's horrific enough.
Oh, no, I know, but being the one who's unconnected, not connected, and wrong place, wrong time, that's such bad luck. But, yeah, no, I get what you say. Now, they did have some sort of relationship, didn't they, in the past, and it was like an intimate relationship, I think.
Jesse Beard friends, some of them have claimed that they were never a couple. It was sort of a friends with benefits thing. And he apparently regularly showed up at Jesse Beard's, and we found out it was a share home with others. So he turned up unannounced. So clearly had a key, and apparently he snuck into the place to delete contacts off his phone. This was last year, and also in the weeks leading up, poured water into his car to make it not work.
Yep.
So you wonder why didn't the locks get changed or something like that? You sort of if this person is turning up to the home that you share with others.
So did he get in that way to carry out the murder?
Well, that's what it looks like. I told your audience last week that Jesse Baird reported waking up at night with a shadowy figure at the end of the bed.
Yeah, I remember you saying that, yeah.
So, yeah, obviously, what a lot of people, well, what the police initially believed and what a lot of people concluded was that it was they allegedly murdered the couple in a jealous rage. And the police commissioner, Karen Webb, she used the words crime of passion, which, of course, didn't go down well. But the fact that he allegedly only wanted to target Jesse Baird and not his boyfriend, it's makes you sort of wonder what was his motive. Because this is the thing. A lot of questions are being asked. How did Bolamar Condon be accepted into the police force after being a celebrity stalker for many years? But that doesn't explain how his stalking of celebrities escalated to this alleged double murder. And it's also been found out by the police that he had stolen bullets from a shooting range. When he used his police-issued Glock revolver, he could put more bullets in so it looked like it hadn't been used when he checked it back in.
Oh, right. I got you.
Yeah. And because he only planned on killing Jesse Baird, allegedly, he went to purchase a second surfboard bag and left the bodies in the patio in the backyard near where, like, this, I think it was like a carport shed was, and put a cover over it. And so the housemates, when they got home, they noticed this, and they prodded the, without taking off the cover, and it felt heavy, and they saw bloodstains but thought it was beetroot.
Oh, what? Okay.
So that's another weird aspect that the housemates, and this is the thing about Bolamar Condon, he went there when the housemates were not there, when he thought Jesse Baird was alone, but Luke Davies was there as well.
Yeah.
So Bolamar Condon, he went to purchase the second surfboard bag, then hired the van from the airport, and then dumped the personal belongings in that skip in Cronulla, and then drove to this town near Goulburn at Bungawa near Goulburn, and then went to Newcastle to help a friend who was a former police officer wash out his car. And she relayed to him that police were after a cop in the murder, and apparently he hadn't slept. The police don't believe that people who helped him, because he purchased to get into that rural property, he purchased a angle grinder and a new padlock, and borrowed torches from a old friend who later became suspicious. So police are not alleging that anyone wittingly
right
with the disposal of the bodies.
Gosh, what a tale. Wow. Yes. Okay.
So as I mentioned at the time, the radical queer activists, as they call themselves, this is new term that, it's mainly used by heterosexuals to make themselves feel special, and also by groomers and Marxists. they've been using it to pursue their anti-police agenda, because they've tried to play down, it seems, Bolamar Condon's homosexuality, like sort of almost tried to erase it, even though he was part of their community as well.
Doesn't it tell us that that it doesn't matter who you are, anyone can be a monster, you know?
Yes, and not every. Also, like the thing is about, because they managed to get the pressured the Mardi Gras board to disinvite New South Wales police, and not every gay police officer is a potential murderer. I mean, that Bolamar Condon, he was part of the police. Police float in 2020.
Oh, was it? Crikey. Yep.
But they reached a compromise, the Mardi Gras board with the New South Wales police. I don't know why it was so important for them to, you know, want to be at this parade, that they'd march not in uniform with their weapons, but they still wore a polo shirt which said New South Wales Police.
But it's got nothing to do with being in the police, is it? Really, that's kind of incidental. I guess it gives you access to a firearm.
Obviously, there are questions for New South Wales Police about how the police firearm was allowed to be in Beaulamard Condon's possession for 3 or 4 days, even though he was...
Yeah, but they didn't let him have it because he was going to go out and shoot
but
a gay couple, you know? I mean,
that could be possible that he could take the gun home for that amount of time.
Yeah.
You're only supposed to have it with you when you're on the job.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no.
And
no
also hiring him in the first place, there's no accusation that he was hired to fit a quota. He was cleared of misconduct using a taser in 2020. His mother was a senior New South Wales police officer, and his sister used to be a police radio dispatcher, but was fired for not taking the COVID vax.
All right. Okay. That's interesting. As if you'd need that to be a radio dispatcher, but okay. What a fascinating story. All right. Let's move on. What's this ASIO Director General? First of all, ASIO, what's that?
Oh, sorry. ASIO is
ASIO.
How the acronym is
pronounced. ASIO. That's a Freudian slip. ASIO Director General, a former politician who sold out your country. Who's he? I presume it's a he. Who's he talking about?
Well, ASIO stands for Australian Security and Intelligence Organisation, which is the Australian government's domestic spy and intelligence agency. So similar to your SIS.
Or GCSB. I gotcha. Yep.
So the Director General, Mike Burgess, in his annual threat assessment, that's what it's called, he mentioned that there was a former politician who sold out their country, party, and former colleagues to advance the interests of a foreign regime. At one point, the former politician even proposed bringing a prime minister's family member into the spy's orbit. Fortunately, that plot did not go ahead, but other schemes did. Because ASIO, the director general, has said for years that foreign interference, espionage, is the number one threat to the nation. So it's surpassed the various extremist terror threats.
They could only be, I mean, we could easily narrow down the list.
Yes, but obviously I have some names that come to mind, but I'm not going to say them on the radio because... there's the defamation threat. But the reason Mike Burgess is refusing to name the politician, ex-politician, even though he knows who they are, is because first he doesn't want to give away ASIO's methods.
Right.
Politician was operating before the foreign interference laws came into place in 2018, which perplexed a lot of people. Hasn't treason always been illegal?
Isn't
that one of the first laws of the Commonwealth Parliament?
Though, do you have to be at war with a country for it to be actually, you know, actual treason? I wonder if you have to be in a state of war. Maybe that's a technical description. But this happened how many years ago?
It would have been 6 or 7 years ago. So Mike Burgess has confirmed the country because this ex-politician were recruited to a foreign influence operation called the A-Team, and is confirmed, well, what everyone guessed was China, because their foreign interference, espionage, influence, it's the most sophisticated, insidious. Their United Front has all of these, well... As the name suggests, front groups, which purport to be Chinese community organisations, but they've got CCP links.
Yep.
And they're
reporting back all the time.
Yeah. Well, trying to influence the Chinese diaspora here, because they still believe the CCP that they're still Chinese and should
be. And they've got relatives back there. They don't want any trouble with the relatives.
Well, that's the other thing as well. And we've still got we had recently an Australian Chinese dissident sentenced to death. And we recently just had last year released Cheng Lei, a Australian Chinese journalist. She's now back here in Australia as a journalist on our Sky News Australia.
Next, Julian Assange, right? If they can do her, they can do Julian Assange, you'd think.
Well, you would have thought that the UK and US, like, you know, we have better relations. We're part of the Five Eyes, AUKUS.
Yeah.
We could get him back easier than from a totalitarian communist regime, China.
Yeah, if you try.
Yeah. It's a suspended death sentence for 2 years. I should name him. His name is Yang Hanjun.
2 years suspended. Does that mean that after 2 years, if he
commits like an offence in prison, then they'll execute him. But if he doesn't, yeah. Okay. That's very generous of the Chinese Communist Party. They're going to grant him clemency. After 2 years, it's like
best behavior for 2 years. Okay, got a few minutes left. We're all interested in the Queensland Supreme Court ruling, I think, relating to police and was it emergency services? And how's that gone down? Basically saying that the COVID mandates were illegal.
Yes, for ambulance workers and police officers who were employed by the Queensland government. So this was only a decision by one justice of the Supreme Court of Queensland, Glenn Martin, ruled that the directive breached Section 58 of the state's Human Rights Act. And so this was class action was bankrolled by Clive Palmer, the founder of the United Australia Party, well, the modern incarnation, it's been deregistered at a state and federal level, though obviously Clive is still, he didn't take the COVID vax, even though he's a big, fat, old guy. And he got COVID, though. Yeah. They wanted to put him on a ventilator.
Well, he went ivermectin, didn't he?
He had a cocktail of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, these alternate treatments, and has made a full recovery. So there you go.
Interesting. Yeah, we've followed. So
there
that
could
case.
Be compensation that could flow.
So this opens the door for further action.
The Queensland government, the Health Minister Shannon Fentiman, has hinted that they will appeal. I think they can appeal to the full bench of the Supreme Court, or there might be a court of appeal. So because it was only one Supreme Court justice, they'll want to obviously.
Well, that will endear them to many people. Not.
Well, they want to get away with it when there's a next time they want to mandate vaccines in a health emergency.
Oh, yeah. All right, a couple more really quick. Dan Andrews subpoenaed. What for? For what?
This is over when his wife was at the wheel when she ran into a teenage cyclist back in 2013 when Dan was opposition leader. He's been subpoenaed in the Supreme Court to hand over his personal telephone and credit card records relating to it. So
they want to see who he called and what he paid for.
Yes. So Ryan Maluman, who was then 15, he was seriously injured, and came out last year and alleged that basically he was told by Victoria Police to stay quiet, otherwise he wouldn't get his Transport Accident Commission compensation. So Dan Andrews, he claimed that the teenager T-boned the car, even though the damage to the car clearly was at the front on the windshield, which implies that they ran into we assume that it was Kath Andrews who was driving. The Victoria Police failed to breath tester, which was common, or which is standard protocol after an accident. And then Dan Andrews was allowed to drive the car away, even though it was clearly unroadworthy and should have been towed away because the windshield was shattered.
Yeah, that's sort of unusual behavior, I would have thought, to do that, unless you're in some kind of shock. So basically, the guy ended up on the bonnet of the car into the windscreen.
Yeah, seriously injured.
So quite an impact.
And had a long recovery.
All right, and to finish up on status of some politicians, Craig Kelly first.
Well, he was the national director of the United Australia Party. He's an ex-Liberal MP, but as I mentioned, it's been deregistered at the Victorian state level and federally. So he's joined Pauline Hanson's One Nation to become its national director, going to fight the next election on the issue of mass immigration, because obviously the reason why our cost of living is higher than it needs to be is because of the mass immigration, depressing wages, and also stretching resources as well.
Okay, Barnaby Joyce, he's what's he doing after we talked about him a few weeks ago?
He took a leave of absence after his, a drunken, a alcohol mixed with medication incident where he was lying on the pavement talking into his phone to his wife, Vicky Campion. The other drunk Nationals senator, Perrin Davey, who slurred her words during Senate estimates, she still maintains she's not drunk. She wasn't drunk. She just had a speech impediment. So she said, my voice changed after I had throat surgery back in 2019 when I was diagnosed with sepsis.
Sepsis, okay. Okay, but she still had a couple of wines, though. She admitted to that.
Yes, but claimed she wasn't drunk. Though it wasn't just her slurring of her words. It was the way that she was speaking. Like she was basically saying to the people who were before the Senate estimates, oh, I really appreciate how you've come in all prepared. Like it was sort of like when someone's drunk, you know, I love you guys. It came across as that. Yeah. So she can't blame that, how she spoke, on a speech impediment.
Tim Wilms from the unshackled.net Melbourne, thanks for updating us again. Good to hear from you, and let's talk again next Tuesday.
We certainly will. All the best, Paul. Until then.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you. So connect with us today.